Good evening, everybody. Can everybody hear me okay? Oh, good. I closed my window, even though the birds were really beautiful, and I thought it would help create atmosphere for the reading. The trucks are not so good, so had to make a decision. Tonight, the reading that I picked are just a couple passages from a book called Zen Seeds by Shundo Oyama Roshi. And look, there she is. Isn't she great? And this book was first published, I think, in 1990, and has recently been reprinted, and the cover is really nice. And if you like Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, you might also like this. It sort of has a similar feel, just sort of these short passages that are nice and digestible, so they make a good reading material. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Shundo Oyama Roshi for those who may not have heard of her. She is a really prominent and prolific Soto Zen teacher in Japan. She was born in 1933 and started her religious education at the age of five, the tender age of five, with her aunt, and ordained as a priest at 15. And I like to think about what I was doing at 15. nothing so serious. I think playing a lot of Xbox and eating takeout pizza. So she started quite young, but went on and got a master's degree from Kumazawa University, which is the Soto Zen school's sort of flagship university in Japan. And that was at a time when, and in many respects, the Soto Zen school still is a very patriarchal institution. So she was one of the first nuns to do higher education and to go on and lecture. And her sort of her practice history is really kind of, in a sense, breaking through a kind of glass ceiling that existed and still exists for women practicing in Japan. So she, I think, I can't remember when this was, but was named Daikyoshi, which is a great teacher. And I think she's the first nun in Japanese history to hold that position. And what I find really, really inspiring about that is that she sort of became so prominent by really leading the way for other women to practice. So sort of reforming aspects of Soto Zen practice so that women could be taken more seriously, women could have more control over their religious education and their practice spaces. And she also has written, I think the number was around 40 publications total. So she is super prolific. And a lot of her work is for lay people, or at least accessible to lay people, and really engages on sort of issues and topics that are drawn from lay life. She's also a teacher of tea ceremony and Zen calligraphy, Shodo, like our dear Michael, and flower arranging, which, and this is taken from things Kate has said, is something that many Japanese women have to take on, or at least sort of Japanese arts. But in her writing, she kind of seamlessly weaves these practices into her teaching. In a way that actually kind of reminds me of the way that Kate can sort of weave poetry into her teachings as well. So if you like Kate, you'll like Shundo Oyama. So I hope I've encouraged everyone to check out this book. It's a great little, just like a little support. You can get through a passage in a few minutes. And so I've picked three, and I hope that will be an okay length of time. And there's sort of three that I think speak to an issue that I've been working on in my practice, and I won't say what it is. I'll read the, and maybe you can guess. So the first is called Hearing the Voice of the Valley Stream. The water of the valley stream is always flowing. It races on, not pausing for even an instant. Its sound, to me, is the sound of time. The water of time glistens on the riverbed of the universe. Though theirs is a much slower flow, stones, trees, houses, and towns are flowing too. Human beings and all things that have life flow. Thought and culture too flow. That all these appear to be unchanging is but illusion. We make every effort to keep things as they are, because human beings alone lament transience. Yet no matter how we grieve or protest, there is no way to impede the flow of anything. If we but see things as they are and flow with them, we may find enjoyment in transience. Because human life is transient, all manner of figures are woven into its fabric. At the beginning of Zazen, when all is still, the sound of the valley stream is loud and clear. When we pace slowly after meditation to ease leg pains and drowsiness, the sound of the stream seems to be less audible. When Zazen is completed, the sound cannot be heard at all. Why should this be? The sound of the valley stream does not actually increase, diminish, or disappear. When the waves in our minds become calm, we can hear the voices of the water, pebbles, grasses, and trees, rivers and mountains teaching us. When our thoughts are occupied with events in the outer world, these non-sentient beings cease their speech. Rather, it is not that they no longer speak, but that when we are caught up by the outer world, we have no ears to hear. As it is with our ears, so it is with our eyes. When the mind's eye is clear, we see all existence naturally, as they are. But the moment our attention is distracted by even a single thought of the outer world, that which is seen is no longer registered truthfully in our minds. We become blind just as we become deaf to the sounds around us. When our attention is pulled here and there, we no longer see what we should be seeing, hear what we should be hearing. When we listen subconsciously to the sound of flowing water, does it not seem to create a rhythm? Yet not a single drop of water passes over the same rock twice, and the murmur of water rushing over a rock is constantly changing. Sameness is but an illusion of the human eyes, ears, and mind. Water that has once flowed along a riverbed can never retrace its course. Human life is no different. It is only our mundane eyes and minds that see yesterday as being the same as today. Enlightened eyes and minds should recognize that each moment has a form different from that of any other moment. And then this is the second little sort of chapter, and it's titled A Heavenly Wind. I pause in my gardening to look at a small bird overhead whose cry has broken the silence. A refreshing wind sweeping down from the Japanese Alps dries the sweat on my brow. Joy in life, joy in work wells up in me. The wind is cold today, isn't it? Comments an elderly woman passing by. Whose house cannot give a welcome to the bright moon, the refreshing breeze? Asks the Blue Cliff Record. The bright moon shines into every house. Every house lies in the path of the refreshing breeze. Does one feel the breeze as refreshing or as a heartlessly cold wind? The difference lies not in the wind, but in the person perceiving it. Someone once told me that such a breeze is called a heavenly wind. Centuries ago, when Zhao Zhou asked Zen master Nan Chuan if he should seek the way, Nan Chuan answered, "If you try for it, you will become separated from it." That which we call paradise or happiness or the Dharma or enlightenment cannot be sought outside us. It will be found only when we notice that we are innately endowed with it. And here's the last one. Zen master Tame Fa Chang lived in China during the late 8th and early 9th centuries. After religious training under his master, Ma Tzu Taui, he secluded himself deep in the mountains. He made himself a robe from the giant lotus leaves that grew abundantly in the marsh, and he lived on the seeds of the pine trees. In this way, he persevered in his Zazen practice for over 30 years. A priest once strayed from the mountain path and by chance came upon Tame's grass hut. When he asked for the path leading to the village, Tame replied, "Follow the flow of the stream," which means that if you simply follow the stream, you will find your way out of the mountains. An essayist, Wariko Kai, wrote this poem. "Although there are rocks and tree roots, rippling along, just rippling along, the water runs." If our ordinary, self-centered viewpoint is dominant, rocks and tree roots are undesirable. But if we change our point of view, then the very fact that there are rocks and tree roots makes the valley stream more beautiful, and the sight of waves breaking upon them beyond description. When we perceive joy, anger, happiness, and sorrow as enriching our lives, just as rocks and tree roots and water spray embellish nature, then we are able to accept whatever happens and live like flowing water without clinging to anything. So that's Shundo. I hope that was a taste of, it's all like that. Those weren't the highlights. There's even better stuff in here. Those are just the ones I found. So these three short verses have really resonated with sort of a tendency I've become increasingly familiar with, thanks in part to our wonderful intensive with Calgary Soto Zen on koan, life koans. I sort of became acquainted with this strong tendency I have to get comfortable. Sort of one of my life koans, sort of the princess and the pea. You know, just if I could just, you know, if I could just get things this way, then my problems would be easier, or then I'd, you know, if not enlightenment, at least I'd have some insight into, you know, what my life is all about, or what I should do next, or what I should have for breakfast. And I just realized or became present to the amount of mental energy and time I put into trying to get comfortable. And, you know, sometimes that can be a good, I think for me, a good pastime. You know, like recently I bought this new cereal that's been advertised on all these podcasts, and it's supposed to be, you know, high protein cereal, low carb. And I think, oh, okay, if I just start my day with this cereal, then I'm not going to be so drowsy. I'll finally get out of bed because I'll be excited about my cereal. I won't sleep in anymore. I won't miss morning zazen. And, you know, my whole life will fall into place. And that hasn't happened. But if it isn't the cereal, then it's something else. And I do this with my Zen practice as well. So when Michael talked about climbing up the 100-foot pole, and, you know, I really can picture myself sort of really working to get to the top. And once I'm at the top of the 100-foot pole, then it's all going to make sense for me. Or if I get up there, I'm not even sure there is an up there. I don't even know if there's a top to that pole. But let's say I get up there, then, you know, I have to expend all this energy to stay comfy up there. And what I feel like Shundo Oyama is reminding me, and I say reminding because I think Michael and Kate say this pretty often, if I'm willing to listen. And I think Dogen says it all the time too. I think everybody is saying it. I think all my friends and Jessica is saying it, which is where I am is okay. if I'm just willing to listen. Michael often talks about the question, where's the joy? At first I thought that meant that I had to go find joy. I had to go, you know, okay, I've got to, you know, go on a walk and go look at the joy. Go see the flowers and then rearrange my life again, sort of get everything sorted so that there's joy in my life. But Shundo, I think Shundo Roshi is sort of expressing that the heavenly wind is always there. And that I'm starting to feel like my practice is about shifting my perspective a little bit, not getting comfy or buying the right cereal or practicing zazen just so, and having my legs just this exact way, but just flipping myself upside down and seeing that that I'm loved, that I'm loved by so many of you and supported by so many of you, that that where I am is okay, that the heavenly wind is always blowing through my house, and that the sounds of the valley stream or the little chirpy chirpy birds or the trucks going up and down my street are always there. And I really appreciate that reminder. So I hope, so I'm sharing this in part in case any of you may also have a tendency towards getting cozy or getting comfy, but also to remind me the next time I say something like, I just bought this cereal, or maybe if I just do it this way. Say, River, you're okay where you are. I give you permission to tell me that. So I came up with a couple questions. I gave it my best shot. But as always, I'm sure, please feel free to ignore them. And if needed, I can type some approximation of them into the chat. The first is there a moment, either recent or maybe not recent, but maybe it stayed with you, where you suddenly could hear the pebbles and the stream and whatever that might be, but just hearing something, some joy or some beauty or some peace that was there all along. And how was that? And what was it that brought your attention around? And is there a time, when when something that maybe you perceived as a rock or a root in that stream, that life stream, something that maybe felt like an obstruction or a place of stuckness, turned out actually to be an enrichment? And how was that? And just lastly, is there a time when you found that shifting perspective, just a change of perspective, made a profound difference in your practice or in your life? I hope those are okay questions. Oh, Kate said yes. Okay, good. And of course, whatever is going on in your life is also very relevant and okay too. So thank you, everybody, for tolerating my reading and my commentary. And it's such a delight to see you all, especially given how fabulous it looks outside. So.